Welcome, welcome, welcome to the Basketball Fiends Podcast, a proud member of the R Esquina Podcast Network. My name is Jesus Acevedo Jr.
And I'm Alex Aguilera, and we are the Basketball Fiends, as you
we
should know by now.
We are the Basketball Fiends. You should know by now. If you don't know that when we say the Basketball Fiends Podcast, Alex and I are the Basketball Fiends. That's we are the Basketball Fiends, clearly. But there's more than one of us. So many Basketball Fiends out there in the world, right, Alex?
Oh, yeah, absolutely, man. Like, it'd be sad if we were the only ones, but thank goodness we're not. So,
no, thank goodness we're not. And a lot of Basketball Fiends, what most of us love the NBA, you know, and the NBA, like a lot of sports leagues, has special rules and special things that happen that sometimes casual fans may not know, such as the buyout market. Alex, do you know what the buyout market is in the NBA?
Like, I mean, I'm reading up more on it just to get a more, I guess, thorough understanding of it. I mean, I feel like I have sort of that fan general, you know, understanding of the buyout market, but I can see how it could be confusing.
Let me try and break it down. So the buyout market happens after the NBA trade deadline. Players that weren't traded because, you know, they couldn't facilitate a trade with another team. The player and the team don't really want each other anymore. So, or maybe it's a situation where the player is a veteran and the team just wants to shed that player from the roster. So what they do is they'll arrange a buyout where the player agrees to a pay cut and the team pays the remainder of that player's contract. After that, the player is placed on waivers and any team can sign this player. So that's essentially what the buyout market is. Players that weren't traded at the trade deadline and the team still wants to get rid of them, pretty much.
Right. I think the confusion is obviously right after the trade deadline. It's like, okay, like how did this guy, you know, go from this team and go to the other team? Like, how did they like buy out his contract per se? So initially it does kind of sound like what's going on? But I mean, it's not that
bad. And it's not that bad. It's business, right? And the thing is why people get upset is that the buyout market typically favors championship contenders. Players that get bought out never go to a team that's in the playoff bubble or a team that's on the bubble of the playoffs or a team that's, they're going to go to contenders, which means that the rich keep getting richer.
I mean, unfortunately, but I mean, that is the way of the league, especially now. And so one guy that ended up going to a contender is Andre Drummond.
Andre Drummond going to the Los Angeles Lakers. Which right now they need that help. Not how much help he's going to be per se, but he is one of those players that is chasing a ring with the contender.
Yeah, no, he is. So, I mean, through 25 games with the Cavs this season, he put up 17.5 points, 13.5 rebounds. So, I mean, you know that you're going to get a ton of boards from Drummond. So, I think in the Lakers' case, especially now, it's good to have him, you know, whether or not he makes that impact.
He's still 27 years old, so he's still young. You know, he can still but now this is what his career is going to be. He's going to be a center that's going to be going from team to team after, especially if he wins a title with the Lakers this year. Now he'll kind of fill that Tyson Chandler role. Not that he's Tyson Chandler, because Tyson Chandler was a better player than Andre Drummond, but he'll be that kind of player where he's just going from team to team and helping them. Another player that was bought out and decided to go to contender was LaMarcus Aldridge, who went to the Brooklyn Nets, which seems like everybody wants to be in Brooklyn this year, Alex. I wonder why.
I wonder why, too. I don't know if it's because Kevin Durant's on the team, if James Harden's on the team, Kyrie Irving, or if they got some nice like city jerseys. I don't know, but I guess, you know, Brooklyn's a nice
it's
place.
It's something. It's a nice place. They got nice pizza. They got good pizza.
Actually, I never had their pizza, so I can't speak on that.
It's pretty good. Okay. No, it is legit. It is legit. I will say that.
Okay, good to know.
But yeah, so LaMarcus Aldridge goes to the Nets, and look, he knows, like, he's not going there to be an all-star, and he was quoted as saying, this is what he said, I'm not here to be an all-star. That's not what I'm trying to do. I'm just trying to bring the value, try to bring the things I'm good at, and trying to help this team win. I'm not worried about being an all-star anymore. So it's essentially, he wants to be on a playoff team, on a championship contender, and a chance to go to the finals. He's never gone to the finals. So this is as best of opportunity that he's going to have.
Oh, yeah. I mean, Absolutely for him. I mean, I know he was in Portland for quite a few years. I know that him and Damian Lillard, that little duo, look like they can do something. But I mean, we all know that the West is pretty, stacked and has been stacked for quite a few years. But I think going with the Nets, he definitely has the right mindset for that situation. He's like, hey, like, I'm not gonna come in here and ball out. I mean, there's three, you know, MVP caliber, you know, Hall of Fame type players on this roster already. So, you know, he knows he's going into a situation where, you know, he's going to do what he can, you know, to help the team. But ultimately, he's like, hey, this is the best opportunity I've had in my whole career for a ring.
And look, I don't mind that he went to the Nets. You know, he may not even finish games. You know, he would maybe get his 15 minutes here or there. But here's another thing he said that I found interesting. He said that he signed with the Nets because he's a big man who can shoot threes and defend. Now, with all due respect to LaMarcus Aldridge, he can shoot. I'll give him that.
But the latter of that statement.
The latter of that. Being a defender, I don't quite put those two together. So I don't know what kind of defense he's talking about. I mean, he's not one who takes charges neither. So, but no, he can definitely help them out in the offensive sets. He's someone that you have to guard because he has a shooter's touch. He can shoot it from the three. So he's going to space out, but he's going to be also a liability on the defensive end.
Oh, yeah. I mean, Durant noted that, too, coming in. He's like, you know, he's definitely going to open up the floor on the offensive end, knowing that, you know, he's just another shooting threat on the floor as well. But didn't mention anything too much about his defense. So,
yeah, right.
Take what you will with what he didn't say, per se. But
exactly. Now, as we continue with the buyout market, it leads us to our next topic, which is a player that thought he was going to hit the buyout market, but instead was traded, and that's J.J. Redick. J.J. Redick was traded to the Dallas Mavericks. Now, the reason why I bring it up is he went recently on his podcast, which is called The Old Man in Three, I believe it's called, and he was very forthcoming about what transpired with the Pelicans, Alex. He pretty much said that he made a trade request in November to the Pelicans. Pelicans VP of basketball operations told J.J. Redick that the team would trade him to a destination closer to his family because J.J. wanted to be closer to Brooklyn. Now, obviously, he wanted to go to Brooklyn like everybody, right? Everybody wants to be in Brooklyn. But I'm sure he would have settled for just an Eastern Coast city or somewhere closer to Brooklyn. Dallas is definitely not closer. Maybe, you know, they need a map of geography. Maybe they just got confused. But clearly, that didn't happen, right? Now, here's the thing. It's not so much that JJ wasn't traded to a preferred destination, or, you know, just so much that he felt betrayed because the Pelicans VP of basketball operations promised him this. Alex, what do you think about that?
Yeah, it's definitely an intriguing situation. I mean, not that I know JJ Redick personally by any means, but he seems like a well-respected guy, you know, in the league. And I feel like he's acknowledged it too. I mean, he understands that there's a business side, you know, to right. basketball where, you know, stuff happens and, you know, it is what it is, you know, as awkward or whatever messed up it can be. But I think at what he's trying to get at is like, hey, like, you know, I contributed as much as I could to this team. I try to help this team win as much as possible. It's like the least you can do is, you know, send me somewhere where I kind of want to go. And for the front office to say, hey, we'll do that for you, and then to just not do that is kind of, you know, a slap in the face.
See, and that's kind of where it gets a little tricky because, look, it's a business, right? We can all acknowledge that. Now, the Pelicans have no right to do exactly what J.J. Redick wants them to do, which is trade them to a trade destination he wants. It's not like you want a title for them or run an MVP trophy for them, right? But the only thing was that the BP promised them that they would do that. And I think to me, that's the thing, which, you know, to me now, if I'm a Pelican player, I'm like, yes, business is business. But when you promise a man to man something and then you just completely do the opposite of that and send them even farther away, that's kind of where it gets a little, get you thinking about what the current Pelican players on the roster are thinking about their BP of basketball operations.
Absolutely. I mean, he also mentioned, too, the Jrue Holiday move that sort of, you know, had an effect on him wanting out in New Orleans. Also, he had also mentioned that he didn't feel like it was an isolated incident, which right. I think attributes to that idea. Like, okay, what do the other players think moving forward with this front office? Is this a place that they want to commit to when in the back of their mind, they kind of see this JJ Redick situation where he's like, hey, like, this is kind of messed up and this happened. But he's like, hey, it isn't just me. Like, this sort of feels like, you know, whether it's been an ongoing situation or he sees it continuing moving forward. So, it, you know, for the Pelicans, it's definitely something for them to really evaluate for themselves to say, hey, you know, how do we want to move forward with our players?
You know, and it's definitely something that needs to be said. It reminds me, I think it was a couple of seasons ago, when the media, there were reports that players weren't too friendly coming to Houston to play with the Houston Rockets because, you know, the front office, this or that. And it needs to be said, you know, the Rockets had 3 in-season trades this season, and they traded all those players, P.J. Tucker to Milwaukee, Victor Oladipo to Miami, and James Harden to Brooklyn. Those were those players' preferred destinations. So the front office worked to get those players to the preferred destinations. Now, James Harden, obviously, he did a lot for the city. P.J. Tucker, obviously, did a lot for the city. Victor Oladipo just got there. Like, he just, you know, stayed a couple nights, and they still got him to his preferred destination. So, you know, it needs to be said, there are front offices that try and do what's right by players. And I say try because it's not always. Trust me, maybe next season the Houston Rockets will do something wrong, right? Every team does it. But at least you make an attempt. But I think to me what fell apart is that he promised them.
Right.
You know, it sucks. It sucks, right? Like, he just broke a promise. But
right, be a man of your word. Just, you know, own up to it.
You know, or at the very least, he could just say, look, I promised you, but it's not going to be possible. Or you know, the Mavs offer was just greater than, you know, for what we needed.
Right,
or,
like, I'm going to do everything in my power to get you where you want to go, but I can't promise
anything. But, exactly. Right.
You know, so.
Sometimes you need a big buddy right there, you know?
Exactly. It's like, hey, I really want to do this for you, but.
But.
I may not be able to. And that's just the business side of it. Like, you're not going to always be able to get what you want in this league. And I think JJ, you know, knows better than anybody in that situation. That's why I don't think he's super bitter about this. But at the same time, he's like, hey, like, this could have been handled a little bit better.
Which now it brings me to mind. Is he going to play with Dallas? He hasn't suited up yet for Dallas, right? So I wonder if Dallas, if they're working on a buyout themselves.
Yeah, well, from what I saw is that he'll join with the team when they head to New York to play the Knicks.
Okay.
And then I also think he's rehabbing as well. So from there, like, he'll meet with the team, rehab while he's in New York, and then eventually meet up with them. So
that takes us to our next topic, which is another player that was traded, but was traded in the offseason. That's Russell Westbrook, an explosive player that won MVP in 2017 when he averaged a triple-double, the first time since Oscar Robertson. Earlier this week, Alex, Westbrook became the third player to notch a 30-10-20 stat line triple-double. He had 35 points, 14 rebounds, and 21 assists. First one to do it since Magic Johnson. Before we get into this topic of the triple-doubles, just your thoughts on that monster stat line from Russell Westbrook.
Man, that's... Hey, you know what? Say what you want about Russell Westbrook, excuse me, but, man, when he has a game, like, the man puts up some very, like, unique numbers that you can't say you've really seen before. And like you said, like, it hadn't been done since the great Magic Johnson, so... I think what we're going to get into this topic is more so not Russell Westbrook and his triple-doubles, but triple-doubles in general in this league.
Definitely. You know, it's been dubbed, I'm sure, by somebody, the triples-doubles era as well as the three-point era. And because the number of triple-doubles has skyrocketed in the past couple of seasons, you know. And I found this out from an AP article, which... Excuse me. Sorry. Just I'm also drinking some Topo Chico hard seltzer, tanking lemon lime. So it's definitely tastes good. And I'm also, you know, you got to burp sometimes. So, but hey, Topo Chico, if you want to sponsor us, we're definitely available. Call my agent, which is really just me.
Right. Shameless plug.
Shameless plug. But anyways, back to the triple doubles. From the AP article, Alex, triple doubles are up 47% from last season. Overall, it's a 700% increase from 9 years ago when there were 18 triple-doubles in the entire 2011-2012 season. That is just mind-skyrocketing numbers, Alex.
Yeah, it's bizarre. I do remember that time when, like, I would always hear Rajon Rondo being the triple-double guy in the league, and I'd be like, wow, man, like, Rajon Rondo putting up triple-doubles, and he would only put up, like, maybe three or four, and I was like, holy crap, like, that's insane. And now you're seeing a triple double damn near every other night. So, I mean, you definitely see how the game has changed and has changed rapidly. You know, we're only talking 9 years ago when you said that 700% from 9 years. Like, that, I mean, that's just insane. But I think one of the quotes that I really like from that AP article you mentioned was how it had said, like, the freedom of movement, emphasis in officiating favors the offensive player. I think that plays a big role into why we're seeing a lot more triple doubles. The article also talked about how, you know, you see more possessions, more rebounds, you know, per game than you normally see. I think it was something where there's about 8 more possessions and 8 more shot attempts per team compared to, you know, those 9 years.
No, yeah, it's definitely that's actually what was gonna be my next point is. The rise has been due to the offensive styles in the NBA and also the many ISO players that this league has. They are good at being ISO players, which means they can score. They can make a play. Essentially, that's what I think of as an ISO player. Triple doubles of the all-time triple doubles all-time list. 11 of the top 20 are current NBA players. Going back to the same AP article, this is the 5th consecutive year the NBA has had 100 triple doubles happening in the season, and the 100th game happened in game number 692 of the NBA season, which is the fastest the league has ever gotten there. So that to me tells me that triple doubles are going to be more common, like a double double is now. Which, look, a double double is still good, but it doesn't hold the same power as a triple double, right? So I think now the triple-double is going to be what a double-double is because more players have those skills. And just like you mentioned from the article, it's the offensive styles and more possessions, more ball movement as well. It's just it lends itself to be more triple-doubles in the future.
Yeah, and real quick also, too, just in case you want to read the article, Tim Reynolds of the Associated Press wrote it, which is a fun read. So just in case you guys want to check that out. But anyway, back to the point that I wanted to say, is that I liked how, I believe it was Stan Van Gundy in the article, talked about how, hey, now that's becoming more common, he doesn't really see the triple-double as being like this big stat that, you know, everyone sort of makes it out to be. And I think there's some truth to that.
Definitely.
A triple-double doesn't necessarily always correlate with a win. You know, people always sort of, you know, nag on Russell Westbrook for, you know, inflating his stats, getting these triple doubles, and his teams don't win. But I also think too, I mean the numbers that he just put up on Monday, like that's insane. It isn't to say that, you know, triple doubles don't mean anything, but at the same time too, you gotta also acknowledge the fact that it isn't always going to have the effect on a game that, you know, the numbers perceive themselves to be. If that makes sense.
Yeah, definitely. And now here's because triple doubles are going to be a bit more common in today's NBA, I think the next stat that I think we should focus on is quadruple doubles because those are so rare in the NBA. Only four players have ever scored a quadruple double, and it's so rare that it hasn't been done in the NBA since 1994. Those four players who have done is Nate Thurman, Allen Robinson, Hakeem Olajuwon, and David Robinson. Alex, here's a question. Do you think we'll see another quadruple-double in the next 5 years?
Man, that's interesting. I kind of want to say yes, just because I feel like now that the triple-doubles are booming, I think eventually we're going to see one quadruple-double pop up at some point. Mm-hmm. But it is kind of bizarre to think because I think it was David Robinson right back in like 94, you said?
Back in 94, David Robinson.
And I mean, just the way the game is played now, it's kind of surprising that it hasn't happened yet.
I am surprised. I will say that. Now, people have gotten close, very close, but I am very surprised just as you that it hasn't at least happened one more time, especially in this era of the NBA. We know the triple-doubles era. It's very surprising that it doesn't. Now, what is surprising that one player has done it twice? Two quadruple doubles. Ooh. Only one player quadruple double. Hakeem, the Dream, Olajuwon.
Yeah.
The GOAT. the GOAT, who I think is a GOAT, and I'm biased. I don't care. You know, he's the GOAT to me. He did it all, you know. He did it with no All-Star. No other, you know, he didn't have no other players come join his team. Granted, Barkley and Scottie Pippen came later, you know, but that was later, right? That was later. but you know, Olajuwon has to be on cloud nine, not just because he has two quadruple-doubles in his career, but because his alma mater and my alma mater, the University of Houston, is in the Final Four, Alex, for the first time since 1984 when Hakeem Olajuwon led them there. And that's our last topic this episode. Final Four, Alex. We're in the Final Four of the men's college basketball and women's college basketball. Before we get into the Final Four men's bracket and women's bracket, what have you made of this tournament? Obviously, we know it hurts to talk about this at times, Alex, but what do you make of the overall tournament this year?
I mean, I think that Oral Roberts run was a little wild. Honestly, I feel like they should have been in the Elite Eight. I would also say, too, that, man, I really wish Illinois was in that spot that Houston's in right now. But, you know, it is what it is. Houston's a damn good team, and they deserve to be there. But I will say, actually, like, the women's tournament has been a little bit more fun than the men's tournament this year.
There's been a big drama as well. You know, I know we can get into the women's tournament first. You know, there was some drama recently earlier this week between UConn and Baylor. And if you didn't see the play, I can't remember Baylor's player. She's their star. She's driving down the lane. She goes up for the shot, and two UConn players just kind of bum brush, sort of bear hugger, but there's contact, Alex. I believe there was contact, but the ref swallowed their whistle, and they just could not see themselves to call a foul in that moment. And UConn escaped with the win, advancing to the Final Four. So it was a play that had people talking. People were talking.
Yeah, I think if you go by the books, it's a foul. But I have seen the argument as well that you know, don't in a game like that, you know, you don't want to put it in the ref's hands, because you know what ended up happening is you had the case where the game ended up being, you know, in the ref's hands and they didn't, you know, make the call, and also the right player was I'm gonna butcher your name. God, we've been butchering names lately, and I hate it.
We have.
Dejona Carrington was the Baylor player that went up for the shot. I mean, if I was in that position, because, I mean, I do like to shoot, like, that's a foul.
You're like, right. I mean, just right. You would want that call. Right. You would want that call.
You would obviously want that call, so it's...
Now, here's what I say. If it was just one player, I'd be like, okay, it was a tough call, but it was two players.
Right, just like, I mean, it wasn't like overwhelming contact, but it's like, man, like all those arms draped over her, it's like it's hard not to call a foul.
It's very hard, and you know, and this is another topic. We need to have a list of topics we need to discuss off season, because I think that the NBA and college basketball should add a fourth referee to the three official setup.
There should have been an official on the baseline, but
So, but yeah, so, well, you know, UConn escaped that Baylor team, because they were a good team. I thought Baylor was going to pull it off. They were a good team. I thought there was a chance we might have both men and women's college basketball championship, because the men's team is also in the Final Four. But we'll get to them. We're talking about the women. So it's going to be UConn advance, and they're going to face Arizona, who's making the first trip to the Final Four, Alex. Now, I don't know much Arizona, but once I started learning about Arizona, one name popped up: Ari McDonald. She is a star guard, and she's led them to this point. And it's going to be an uphill battle. You know, UConn are the giants of women's basketball, right?
Yeah, you talk about giants, and you got Paige Buckers, whose name is just perfect for the game of basketball, because she gets buckets. And I'm all in on the Paige Buckers train, the hype train, the bandwagon, whatever you want to call it, because she can hoop. Yeah. And it's, oh my God, I love that girl, man. She did. I can't wait to see what she does, you know, moving forward in her professional career. But, you know, I'm all in on her. I got UConn over Arizona.
Yeah, I got, just because I want to see the Cinderella story go, and just because I was upset about the Baylor thing, because I was pulling for Baylor. I think Arizona may pull the upset. And if Arizona pulls that upset, I think they win it all, because UConn is a big monster to take down. You know, it's a big monster.
Yeah, man. If you can take down UConn, then damn, you you're right, pretty much bound to win it.
Now, on the other side of the bracket, we have Stanford versus South Carolina. Now, South Carolina, they won the title in 2017, was their first title. And they were set to win, from what I was seeing, they were set to win it last year too, had the tournament not been canceled. They were one of the favorites. They're looking like they want to get back to the title championship.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I mean, I can't speak too much on South Carolina. You know, sorry, pardon me for not doing my homework on South Carolina, but I want to say they, you know, they're bringing back a lot of players. I mean, that's another great program. You know, that's right. In the women's game. I mean, you talk about the UConns and the Baylors and the Stanfords. Like, South Carolina is definitely up there with them. Oh, yeah, Tennessee. Forgot about them.
And I mean, South Carolina definitely has built up the program, you know, because when I was growing up, it wasn't a name I heard frequently. You know, obviously, UConns, you know, all those names that you mentioned, we've heard often. But, you know, Stanford, South Carolina, I think Stanford, with their balanced shooting, I think they'll be able to squeak it out against South Carolina. And then I think I think it might be UConn Stanford. And if that's the case, if UConn gets to the title game, I think UConn's gonna take it. You know, when UConn's in the title game, just bet on UConn. That's what I've come to expect in the women's basketball, college basketball game.
Like, you don't even have to really like dive into it. It's just it's UConn,
right? But then it's also, you know, it's also a situation where they're just expected to win because that's the pedigree that they've shown us through decades of them being just historic winning championship team.
Nah, man, Gino Auriemma, he's got a squad over there, and just the players that have come out of that program are just, you know, insane. You got Diana Taurasi, Sue Bird. You've got Gabby Williams, who is with the Chicago Sky, so that's why I mentioned her. But, man, just a plethora of great talent coming from that UConn program.
Definitely. Now we go on to the men's bracket, which is the men's bracket.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about the men.
We got excited about the women's basketball, you know, college basketball championship. It happens. But the men's bracket, it's going to be a good one. We got Gonzaga versus USC, which Gonzaga is undefeated this season, Alex. They haven't lost a game. And to be honest, I don't think they have been tested this season at all, like really tested. It could be said that if they get past USC, who's USC is riding a wave of emotion at the moment. They played in the first four.
Yeah.
They are just on a roll. And, you know, if you guys go to rskinner.com, you got to check out a story on UCLA's Jaime Jaquez Jr. Jose de Jesus de Ortiz wrote a great story on him, who he is. He has been one of the leading players in USCLA to lead them to this point. But man, Gonzaga is just like how we're saying UConn is a monster. Gonzaga this season has been just, they're like the monsters of Space Jam.
Yeah, man, this looks like it's teeing up to be that year that finally they win it all. But you mentioned like Jaime Jaquez. I was watching that first four playing game against Michigan State, and you know, he got hot, you know, towards the end of the game, and I was watching him. I'm like, man, like he could.
He has
like
a nice little stroke. He has a nice stroke.
Yeah, he's got a nice little stroke, and I was just like, man, like he actually might be a guy that could do a little something in this tournament. And lo and behold, man, is a key part as to why UCLA is in the Final Four. So, should be an intriguing matchup. I mean, I know obviously on paper Gonzaga looks like, you know, they're the squad that's gonna win it. But I don't know this UCLA team and.
I'm telling you, man, sometimes when you have momentum, no matter who's in front of you, you're going to give them just a tough just fight. You know, if anything, you know it's going to be a fight. But, yeah, if that's one thing that also scares me about Gonzaga is that – scares me for Gonzaga also is that they haven't really been tested. You know, so if they get tested, like in a game, maybe they're down double digits or like, whoa, you know, what
right.
Can they respond? Granted, they have the talent to respond. But they just haven't been put in those positions much, if at all, this season.
Right. Are they a good enough team where they're so good that they haven't had to face the adversity? Or is it, or, you know, with this UCLA game, does it come the time where, you know, they finally face some adversity? And are they a good enough team to overcome it? So we'll see.
Right. Now, another team that's going to face big hurdle is my U of H Cougars. They're going up against Baylor, which Baylor, for the longest, people have said it's going to be Gonzaga-Baylor in the championship, you know. And I know those whoever picked the brackets and made the matchups, they made sure that Gonzaga and Baylor were on opposite brackets, because that's what everybody wants to see. Let's be honest. Everybody wants Gonzaga and Baylor. They've been the two best teams from the jump. Gonzaga and Baylor have just outgunned and outrun everybody. But Houston, let me tell you, it's a bunch of dogs on that team, Alex.
Tell me about them.
Warriors, man. The John Giroux, Quentin Grimes, I mean, the rest of the Cougars, they're going to be ready for the challenge. They entered the Final Four with the number 7 offense and number 8 defense in the country. They are, man, the John Giroux and Davion Mitchell, that's going to be the matchup to watch. Those two, Davion Mitchell has NBA, like, he's going to be top 10 pick. And DeJon Giroux, he is defensive specialist. He is, like, he has worked his way. Entering this tournament, I thought DeJon Giroux was maybe a late second round undrafted pick, you know, but could still make it to the NBA. With this tournament, I think he's a second round pick, maybe a depends how he does in this Final Four, maybe a late first. Like, defender can shoot it, so it's gonna be a good challenge if he does well against Davion Mitchell. But I think it's gonna be a close game. I know everybody's picking Baylor, and you know that's what I picked in my Final Four bracket. I had Gonzaga Baylor, but I think it's gonna be a close game, man. I know you saw the U of H game, and U of H, when they get going, they locked on you on defense, and they can rebound. Like, yeah, they get, man, three possessions out of one trip, three possessions, just because they just out hustle you and out work you.
Yeah, man, those Cougars, man, I mean, I know they're Cougars, but they're some dogs too, man. Like, that's a gritty team, and, you know, Baylor's got a handful, you know, going up against them. So I'm liking that matchup. I mean, I know a lot of people got Baylor, but if there's a team that can, you know, bounce Baylor, like, honestly, like, Houston's a squad, man. They can do it.
You know, and credit to Kelvin Sampson, you know, he's built that program. He's built it step by step, brick by brick. You know, and he's had opportunities in past tournaments to reach to this point, you know, but a buzzer beater that I'll never forget, the Michigan buzzer beater in the round of 16, Sweet 16, that took out U of H. Rob Gray was on the team. He was carrying him. So it's great to see how this team has come back. You know, since 1984, they're in the first time in the Final Four. So I know the city is really hyped about it. But, you know, we got a lot of Baylor fans here, a lot of Baylor alumni here in Houston too. So it's a lot of trash talking going on. Yeah, it's a lot of Baylor people here. So it's going to be fun. You know, and, you know, shout out Texas basketball, 2 Texas colleges in the Final Four.
Yeah, man.
So
we're always so used to seeing those East Coast teams, the North Carolinas, the Dukes. I mean, Kentucky, even though they're in the Midwest. But, yeah, it's nice to see some new blood in the Final Four in Texas at that.
And it also needs to be said, the Pac-12 represented in this tournament.
Yeah, man, Pac-12 showed up.
And I think, you know, it's something that it said, because we mostly pay attention to East Coast teams because those games are earlier, I think. And Pac-12 teams, games are like 9, so we're like, oh, do I want to stay up and watch this Oregon State, USC? You know, so, but they represented. They showed out.
Yeah, man. Like, what the Pac-12 did this tournament is what everyone expected the Big Ten to do. And I can attest to that because I went to a Big Ten school. I covered Big Ten sports, so I was just all in like, yo, the Big Ten is stacked this year. And they flamed out early.
Yeah, man. Yeah. That I did not expect most Big Ten teams to kind of flame. I know it was surprising.
Yeah.
So. But it's also, maybe it's the media narrative that, you know, we were fed because the Big Ten is in a prime market. So,
yeah. I mean, hey, I can admit when I'm wrong. I mean, you know, I was riding high on Illinois after, you know, winning the Big Ten tournament and, you know, getting bounced in the second round. It hurts, it stings, but hey, our last Final Four was 05. You had to wait until 1985.
Trust me, it's been a while. Like, I remember covering this team when I first went to U of H my first year. I was covering them. James Dickey was the coach, just older gentleman. And I remember seeing them play in the Hot Fines Pavilion, and yeah, it's been a ride. It's been a ride, man. My pick, I'm going to go for it. I know in my bracket I have Gonzaga and Baylor, but I'm going to say it's going to be Gonzaga-Houston.
Hey,
Gonzaga-Houston, and Gonzaga takes it. That's what I say.
Okay. All right. I got a Gonzaga bracket and a Baylor bracket, so I don't care.
But tell me right now in front of me, the basketball fans, let us know.
I got Gonzaga, Baylor. Give me Gonzaga. All right. You heard it.
I think Gonzaga needs to win it. Like, you know, I know.
If they don't win it this year, it's like, oh.
Right? Like, I mean, if this isn't your year where you went undefeated, you have the most talent roster that I've ever seen from Gonzaga ever. And they just, you have to just put the cherry on top. Come on. Like, this is like, this undefeated season is for all those other years where they were just there, almost there. You know, other past season, this is it. This undefeated season is for all them.
This is the one.
This is the one. Well, that does it for another episode of the Basketball Fiends. Alex, what are your plans for this weekend?
I got some family coming in from New York, so gonna spend some time with them. My aunt, my uncle, my baby cousin. So finally get to see her. Don't get to see her as much.
Nice.
So spend some time with her. And yeah, man. How about you?
I don't know what I got planned this weekend. Something will come up for sure. I'm watching Falcon and Winter Soldier. Definitely watching that. And I don't know. We'll see what the weekend brings.
Play by ear. I dig it.
Play by ear. Well, there you go. Thank you for listening, everybody. Don't forget to subscribe. See ya.
Deuces. We'll be right back.